Welcome back to the 21st. I'm Julian Haida. Early adulthood can be a huge transition for anyone, and for people with autism, this stage of life comes with its own unique challenges. Whether it's navigating complicated systems for support or finding resources outside of the school system, or planning for the long term, there's a lot to navigate. A program funded by the National Institute of Mental Health aims to help. WILL and Side Effects Health reporter Christine Herman recently spoke with two people involved in the research. Megan Burke is a professor of special education at the U of I, and Linda Tortorelli is the coordinator for the autism program at the University of Illinois. They spoke with Christine yesterday.
So, Linda, I wonder if we can just kind of dive right in here. Can you talk a little bit about the challenges that families face when you have a child with autism, and in particular during this transition age in the late teens into the early 20s?
There are many challenges that face the individuals with autism and their families. Knowing what they would like to do or what they might be capable of doing after they graduate high school can be challenging under the best circumstances. Having a person with autism that might not fully understand the expectation of their desires and their requirements can be difficult for families to try and figure out how to set those expectations within reason. Then the systems that need to be navigated, how to get special supports. If the individual is looking at post-secondary education, how do you access disability supports at colleges? And if your individual is not going to be going on to college and needs supports that agencies might be providing or community supports, all of those are really siloed. They're not coordinated at all. So how to navigate each one of them takes time to research and build expertise in access and then ongoing. Just because you finally access the support, there's other expectations on figuring out how to keep it in place even after you get it. So there's many, many layers to this.
Complicated systems to navigate. You also have to learn how to advocate for yourself. I imagine for children with autism, as a parent, you're trying to help them maybe take some of this on themselves, but you're also very much involved, and I imagine that depends on the severity of the child's autism, would you say?
Definitely. So for youth that have more challenges, that are more impacted by their autism, parents might be seeking guardianship or powers of attorney so that they have authority to speak for their youth.
Okay.
So that they're maybe navigating those systems for them or maybe in tandem, but really being the primary driver in accessing those supports. If the youth has enough cognitive ability that they're their own guardian, that they maybe aren't going to sign over powers of attorney to their parents, that becomes really difficult because the parents don't have the authority to speak for them anymore.
Once they're 18. Yeah.
Right.
So it's really up to the adult child now to determine if they want their parents involved even.
Absolutely.
So that can be a conversation to have to navigate as well, sounds like.
And it's a tricky age at best.
Sure. Yeah. So, I mean, this age can be a huge transition for any family. And Linda, you have personal experience with this, right? How old is your son?
My son is now 30.
What was this like for you?
We started, by the time he was about 15, starting to look ahead and say, you know, I really figured out how to navigate and advocate through the school system. And I turned my attention to the adult system, which is entirely different, at about age 15 and said, I really have to start to figure out this other system. And so really turning to other parents, a little bit to the school district and to the internet, trying to figure out how to put all the parts and pieces. And my son has more needs, support needs. And so looking at things like Social Security and guardianship and future planning for estate planning and all those kind of more complex things are things that I had to investigate and navigate and figure out ways to educate, mostly myself, on how to get through those things.
I'm speaking with Linda Tortorelli. She's the Autism Program Coordinator at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. I'm also joined by Megan Burke, Professor of Special Education at the U of I. Megan, I understand you also have some personal experience with this. Do you have a brother with autism as well?
I have a brother with Down syndrome.
Down syndrome.
So he's 26, and so I've helped my parents navigate adult services for him. And then I have a five-year-old with autism.
I see. What was it like for your brother, if you're able to talk about that, and your parents navigating this? Was it similar to what Linda just described?
Yeah, I would say it's difficult. It's definitely difficult to learn. I think it's almost misleading to call it the adult service delivery system because it's actually multiple systems, and they usually don't speak to one another, and they have different bureaucracies, different eligibility schemes, different services and supports they offer, and different ways to kind of maintain your eligibility. So it's hard as you leave school services where, you know, it's one school system that you're learning to navigate and advocate for services, to then switch gears and learn about multiple service delivery systems.
And you've both hinted at this. You mentioned that prior to age 18, when they're in the school system, it's all in one place because you're working through special education, mm-hmm. and that's kind of coordinating both the education and the other services that the child needs. So is that what it means when I understand that adult services are described as eligibility-driven, not entitlement-driven? Can you explain that distinction?
Sure. Education is a right that all children in the United States have. So you're eligible by being a child in the United States. So that's what the law entitles all children to. When it comes to adult services in Illinois, they are mostly based on you have to be eligible based on your disability, and then they have to be available. They have to be funded. So you might be eligible, but they might not be available. There is some level of entitlement, and there are states that have more entitlement than Illinois has, but our entitlement is very narrow, and the majority of our services are not entitlements in the adult service system.
That's interesting that you make the distinction between being eligible and actually being able to access the services. The services have to exist. Is the state not required to provide services to adults with disabilities who need it? Maybe that's a complex question.
It is a complex question.
Yeah.
It depends on which service you're talking about. There are multiple services. I think one that we think of most frequently is the Medicaid Home and Community-Based Services waiver. And so that's something that you can prove that you're eligible for and prove that you're eligible for supports in the homes, home-based supports, or community-based supports, so living in a group home or living in the community with supports. Some states have no waiting lists for those types of services. Illinois has a lengthy waiting list of about 20,000 people.
And I understand there are lawsuits associated with this particular aspect of it, right?
Yes.
Illinois is still heavily dependent on more institutional type care. We still have 7 state-operated developmental centers, and we have many what are called intermediate care facilities, and those are part of our old entitlement system. But families and individuals today aren't looking for segregated living arrangements. They really want to be integrated in their communities and employment and social activities and living amongst, you know, neighbors. And we're very much an outlier in how we are funding our adult system. We're very heavily funding still these very segregated living that is not desirable.
Yeah. But you are both working within this space to try to make this easier to navigate within the current system we have, for better or worse. And so you recently received a grant from the National Institute of Mental Health to study a particular program known as ASSIST, and what difference that can make for families. Let's talk about the ASSIST program. What is it?
So the ASSIST program is a 12-week advocacy training program for parents of young adults with autism aged 16 to 26. The training program goes over how to advocate for adult services and then kind of different adult services that your youth may be eligible for. So those services vary, but they include vocational rehab services, so services to help you with employment, the Medicaid waiver that we already mentioned, supplemental security insurance, Social Security disability insurance, guardianship that Linda already mentioned, person-centered planning, Section 8 housing. The list goes on and on. It's 12 sessions and 2 hours for each session, so it's roughly 24 hours with some readings and a letter of intent that goes along with it. So it's a pretty intense training program to help parents learn what services are available, what may be appropriate for their youth, and then how to advocate for those services.
Okay. And so this program had already been implemented in Tennessee, right? And now it's here in Illinois in Naperville. Is that right?
Right. So we had Julie Lowndes Taylor, who's a professor at Vanderbilt, had received the initial grant, which was a pilot grant to develop and test assist in Tennessee. So we tested it with 40 families, and that showed that when families went through the assist program, they demonstrated significantly improved knowledge about adult services, advocacy skills, and empowerment. Mm. And then we measured them again about 6 months later, and their youth with autism had significantly decreased unmet service needs. So they were able to access more services, and they were more likely to be in post-secondary education settings or in employment. So we made an argument to scale it up to say, let's see if this works beyond Tennessee. Let's look at it and see if it works across three states that are very different from one another in terms of adult services, and see if it's something that we can kind of scale up nationally to help families. Because the issues we've mentioned, although Illinois has its problems, lots of families in lots of different states really struggle to access services.
And so in Illinois, you're scaling it up. So can families still sign up, or has it already been determined and now you're kind of studying to see how it affects the families that are enrolled?
So that's a good question. We're still potentially looking for people. We're running it starting next week, and then we're going to offer another training in the fall. So people could contact us if they're interested. We've received a lot of feedback and a lot of interest, so we will definitely exceed the number of participants that we need for the actual study. But we're keeping track of people who are interested so that we're able to make sure that the materials in the curriculum, if it's effective, we can share with them after the study ends.
Hmm. Is there anything you would add to that, Linda?
Just to the point about making it scalable, we are looking at the autism program, which we call TAP, statewide, being able to be a home for this curriculum going forward, because part of the research was where could this be housed so that it just isn't sort of over when the research ends. So I'm going to be a trainer for these sessions, and the administration of TAP is very interested and committed to having this perhaps be the home for it going on into the future.
Because, I mean, are there other programs like this elsewhere that help specifically at this stage of life and with this transition, to your knowledge?
There isn't any programs, to our knowledge, that are this structured and organized. There's online information that parents can access quite a few different ways if they wanted to do some online learning. And this is part of the research, is there's a control group that's mm-hmm. going to have access to the materials just in a binder. And the participants are going to be followed for 3 years. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to be looking at, you know, what are the outcomes for the participants that actually took the live training, and what's the outcomes for the participants that just had the binder, because it's not been studied. The outcomes have not been studied. Mm. Information has been made available in online format or paper format, but generally any live programmings have been like, come and hear a 1 hour overview, or come to two sessions, or parents can find a topic. Somebody's speaking about Social Security, and they just have to go decide that they want to listen to that topic. To my knowledge, there hasn't been anything that's been this structured to cover all the topics.
I also imagine it's just could be nice to have that kind of support from people who understand and can empathize with what you're going through. Do you think that could play a role in this as well?
Yeah. In our pilot, when we ran it, the families really enjoyed meeting other parents of young adults with autism. I think they mentioned, you know, sometimes they feel disconnected, especially because the age of their youth, that they're not in school anymore, they're not meeting other parents. So they really enjoyed that social aspect of meeting other families who are having the same experiences. They can learn from one another and kind of gain some of that peer support. And I think part of our hypothesis is that the live training will be more effective than the materials because they'll have access to that peer support. But it is important to test because we're also looking at parents of young adults with autism who tend to be much more stressed than the rest of the population, who have a lot of things going on. We don't want to offer them a 24-hour training if they could yield the same benefit by just reading the materials.
That makes a lot of sense, yeah. So I wonder if we could talk a little bit big picture just for the last minute here. You mentioned that Illinois is one of the worst states. Are there other states that are doing this better when it comes to support for adults with disabilities, whether it's autism or something else? Are there lessons that Illinois can learn from from other states. Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much all of them.
We are pretty much almost at the bottom of the barrel of all the states on how we provide community-based supports for individuals with intellectual and developmental disabilities. There's only maybe about two or three states that do it worse than Illinois.
Is it a matter of funding, or is it the way the system is designed?
I think it's a matter of philosophy. Mm. I mean, certainly because we fund at a much higher rate our segregated services, you know, in institutions and in the ICF, these larger congregate living, and we don't fund community-based services at the same rates that we fund those segregated living. So while more dollars are needed for community-based, what really needs to happen is that these other systems that we're funding need to really come to an end. I think the majority of the states have zero or only one state-operated institution, while Illinois, the only state that has more institutions, is Texas than Illinois.
Because it's a whole idea of when you institutionalize a person, I mean, it's sort of like it can be viewed as warehousing. Or this is was a shift that happened with mental health when institutions closed down. I mean, unfortunately, I've learned that there's been largely a failure to reinvest those dollars into the community-based care that you mentioned, but that is the idea of that's what it would take to actually really help families that are dealing
with this. That's exactly what it's going to take.
For you, Linda, I'm curious to hear, like, what difference would this kind of program have made when you were going through this transition over a decade ago?
It would have saved me probably 3 years worth of work that I did on my own, going to workshops and internet. And those things are wonderful and can supplement. But to really have in one place, like, okay, these are the components that I need to have an understanding about and customize it to where my son is or was, would have been tremendously helpful. And I think the component of being with other parents on the journey, I was really doing this in isolation all the time. It really is helpful to hear other people's stories that might just be a step ahead of you. And I always really feel like paying it forward as well for the parents that are just kind of right behind me to say, here's what I found out, and offering those tips and tricks that I've learned along the way.
That was WILL and Side Effects Health reporter Christine Herman speaking with Linda Tortorelli, the autism program coordinator at the University of Illinois Champaign-Urbana, who designed the ASSIST curriculum, and Megan Burke, also a professor at the U of I in special education and principal investigator of the ASSIST program. I'm Julian Haida. Stay tuned. You're listening to The 21st.